Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to Cup of Cubby Blue. The Cubs are on a West Coast road trip that is so far not going horrendously home for Cubs news, notes, updates, and banter. We're proudly affiliated with the Fans First Sports Network. I'm Sarah Sanchez, and as always, I am joined by the one and only Danny Rocket. We're going to break it all down. How's it going for you on this Monday, Danny?
Hey, you know, I'm feeling pretty good. You know, the Cubs pulled out a series win over the weekend up in Seattle. Our friend Infield Fly Girl was at all the games, having a good time, meeting up with a couple other of the Ranters, you know, fans of the Sun Ranto show. And it's, you know, I feel good because the Mariners, they're a pretty good team. We caught them at a time when they're not hitting at all. And that meant, but hey, you know, if you're 500 on a West Coast road trip, and you're going into your Monday down in Arizona feeling like you might have it set up to have at least a 500 situation coming back home, you're feeling pretty good about those things. Treading water during a tough part of your schedule. And that's how I feel on a Monday morning as it is.
Yeah, treading water during a tough part of your schedule.
I know both of us have been crazy with our schedules, so we have to let our listeners know that this is a miracle that we're even doing this show right now. But if anybody can bullshit about Cubs baseball for 45 minutes, it is Sarah and I. We do this. We could do this on a street corner in the middle of
and we do.
Yeah, and we do. Exactly.
And we do.
So this time we're recording it.
Frequently run into each other and just start talking about the Cubs randomly. Let's dive right in. So, yeah, as Danny mentioned, it's been a wildly busy time for both of us, but we're both following the games. We're both with it and into it. Danny did inform me, though, as I sat down, Alexander Canario appears to be coming up with the Cubs. We do not know any corresponding news yet. Danny, what do we think about Canario here? That has to signal that whoever they're trying to replace is an outfielder, right? I guess they could DH him, but
yeah. Yeah, outfielder or DH, you know, I thought maybe it could be Morel. I know he's been bugged with like a finger thing.
Yeah.
And then it's hard to speculate who else it might be. I mean, Seiya Suzuki.
I hope it's not Morel or Seiya, honestly. But I mean,
Well, exactly. Those are your two best hitters that
indeed.
One of them might be gone. Yeah.
But also, that would suck. I really don't like the idea of calling Canario up to DH. Like, why would you mess with yet another one of your great hitters by not playing them in a position and just DHing them? You know what I mean? Like, I feel like that really was a disservice to Christopher Morel, and I'd hate to see them do it to another great hitting prospect.
Yeah, of course. And there wouldn't be another place for him to play. And you don't want to see Seiya going down. He's been hitting the ball hard all year so far. And just looks, I mean, people are already talking MVP for Seiya Suzuki.
As they should be. He looks great.
Yeah. So it would be a real shame to lose him. But I forget what happened. So this was all Twitter speculation. Oh, it could be Seiya because this happened. And it could be Morel because his finger hurts. But that it would be an IL stint enough that it wouldn't be a day-to-day thing is a little sad to me. Or that doesn't mean it is one of those guys. It could be that they've had enough of Miles Mastroboni or they've had enough of Nick Madrigal. And, you know, but that wouldn't make sense because those guys are infielders. So, yeah, you think about an outfield spot. I don't know. We'll see what happens. It's tough to speculate. But I am glad Alexander Canario's on the team because he's already looking great in AAA. I was looking at his numbers here. In AAA, he's already got 2 home runs on the year. He's got an 858 OPS. He's got 14 hits, 5 of them being doubles. And that's in 52 at-bats, 61 plate appearances. Not really walking, but he's not really striking out either. So you'll think if you can get that production, Not that it's going to replace a Morel or a, say, a Suzuki, but.
I'm sorry. I'm trying to say this in a diplomatic way because Cubs Twitter at this moment in time is kind of driving me crazy. I do understand why people are speculating about Morel, given the finger thing that seemed to be bugging him in those at-bats in Seattle. I am entirely unsure why people are speculating about Seiya Suzuki. Is there some reason we think Seiya might be hit, or is this just Cubs fans being overwhelmingly pessimistic because they can?
Well, I don't know what specifically happened to Seiya Suzuki. I have no idea.
I don't think there's anything. I think this is literally just Cubs fans being very pessimistic. Our friend Crawley has a tweet out, and he's the only one I can see with this speculation, saying that Ian Happ hasn't looked great this season. Maybe he's dealing with something that we don't know about.
He had had the hamstring thing, and he had missed a bunch of spring training. So maybe I'm surprised we haven't heard anything yet.
Sorry, Happ. Not that I want Ian Happ to be hurt, but like,
but if it's one of you, yeah,
I would strongly out of those three options.
Ian Happ, all right, if you
I
want to go by...
I strongly prefer the guy to be hurt to be Ian Happ.
Well, let's go by yesterday's game, okay? Ian Happ, 0 for 4 with 2 strikeouts out of the leadoff spot. 690 OPS on the season so far. He did get into one yet the other day and did hit a home run his first of the year. Only one of the year. But say a Suzuki yesterday, 2 for 4, it had a double.
He seems fine. Like, run. I think Seiya's okay, everybody.
Yeah, Morel did go 0 for 4 with 2 strikeouts, now batting .237.
I'm not worried about Morel's batting average. He's going to be fine.
They took him out at the end of the game, and Madrigal came in, but, you know, that's been happening anyway.
Though. That was a one-run game. Although, let's actually go here right now.
Okay.
Christopher Morel flashed some leather in this series, and I was here for it, Danny. That was a tight game, and Christopher Morel saved the game on multiple occasions. And I just think we need to talk about my third baseman and yours, Christopher Morel.
I just like that the haters had to shut up for a game because there's a lot of haters. All right, right now, because we're throwing Ranter Fest at the end of May, beginning of June, and it's going to be a who's who, a who's that of all the Cubs bloggers and podcasters. I'm trying to get at least somebody from every outfit. So in order to do that, I'm like, you know what? I bet you there's new Cubs podcast out there. So I started checking out a few of them. Some of them are pretty good, pretty knowledgeable people. They love the Cubs. They're talking about the Cubs. I was enjoying some of the podcasts, but almost to a man, they were talking about how terrible Chris Morel is in the field. And we are split because other people don't feel that way. And it's definitely a thing we're arguing about. I know where you come down on it. I think that, you know, he's not the greatest out there, but he has the strongest arm of anybody. Well, Patrick Wisdom has a pretty strong arm, but I think him and Morel are actually quite similar in the skills that they bring to the table, Morel and Wisdom. Both of them can freaking hit you a moonshot, aren't great at third, but Morel, I think he's young. He could learn it. And they gave that chance to Madrigal last year. We have to be patient with him over there. And to see him flashing leather is freaking awesome, especially to shut up the haters. Like, I wanted to text Crawley immediately. I'm like, you see that? You see that? Because Crawley's a hater. You brought
it's
him up.
It's driving me crazy. They're on Bleed Cubby Blue in the comments, too. All I hear about is how great of a third baseman Nick Madrigal is. And, like, I cannot right now. I'm
it's
like,
sickening.
Yeah. I'm kind of over it. I don't know why you wouldn't want a 23, 24-year-old with that bat to grow and evolve defensively as your third baseman. Like, I just don't understand how people are down on the Christopher Morel experience in any way, shape, or form. All of you are ridiculous. The Morel glove game was amazing. Go ahead.
One more thing on it, not to mention the flexibility it gives you to the DH spot. The part of the problem, getting back to what you're saying about Canario bringing him up here and just DHing him locks in that spot. So if you don't have him in the outfield, he's got a great arm too. Right. I mean, this kid can play outfield as well. So it's like, you know, if it is a corner outfield spot, that still gives you that DH to kind of play with, get yourself some matchups going. Like, oh, Tauchman looks good against this guy. I'm going to match him up. Even in Madrigal, you match him up right in a way that you can do that stuff with DHs in a way that if you have it locked up with just a professional hitter, which I don't think Canario is, you know, especially a young guy, that's who you don't want to lock up in a DH spot, is a young dude.
Right.
And I'm sorry to see him flashing the leather, making a couple nice plays. He's still going to mess up sometimes, but what he's going to bring you on offense is hopefully enough to make up for it. And then some.
Totally agree. 100%. Speaking of guys who are doing it on offense and just making things look easy at this moment in time, I think we need to have a conversation about Michael Bush, who I admit I was a little bit skeptical of, not because I had any doubts about the bat, but there were just two things. One, anytime the Dodgers are willing to trade a guy, I have some questions, right? And number two, as we've discussed on the show before, the PCL can be a place that really amplifies offensive stats. That's the minor league area where the Dodgers play and where Michael Bush was getting his AAA stats. We've seen this before with guys like Gavin Lux, who looked really good in AAA, and then they come up to the majors, and it's like, this is not quite the offensive powerhouse you thought this human being was going to be. Michael Bush looks like an offensive powerhouse. And since that Dodgers series, he has been raking. We are up to, am I reading this right? 5 home runs for Michael Bush at this point in time. The stroke looks incredible. What do you see from Michael Bush, Danny?
Yeah, I mean, I also predicted, not only do I predict Seiya Suzuki as MVP, but I wanted to take the parlay. I am not a betting man, but I was like, I wonder what the odds are of this are. And I texted my friend Cody Del Mendo from CHGO, otherwise known as Chuggo. He loves when I say it like that. but I texted him. I'm like, what could I get if I parlayed a Seiya Suzuki MVP and a rookie of the year for Michael Bush? And he's like, oh, you can make a lot of money even if you put down $10. I'm like, oh, well, then it's a no-brainer. I should do it. But since then, both the Michael Bush rookie of the year numbers have come down, so you wouldn't make as much money, and the Seiya Suzuki MVP numbers have come down. And it's early, it's April, but this kid looks like the words as advertised have been overused recently by everybody, but this is what he was doing in AAA. But I'd be remiss if I did not mention that Matt Mervis is also this person, and he's the same person almost exactly. Right now, Matt Mervis at AAA in Iowa already has 4 home runs in 59 plate appearances, 48 at bats. He's walking. He's striking out a little bit too much, but he's got an OPS over 1.111 at AAA. It's like, what does Matt Mervis have to do? He is a left-handed first baseman, and they're like, no, we don't need you. We're going to get Michael Bush, who, by the way, can play third. So there's other things you can do if Matt Mervis is truly going to hit you 30 bombs as well. Like, I just don't know why. I love what Michael Bush is doing. I just don't know why he's getting the chance that Matt Mervis never really did.
It's a great question. I honestly think that, well, first off, part of the reason Michael Bush is getting this chance is because he's doing the thing. Like, Matt Mervis had 0 home runs in Major League Baseball. He played 98 plate appearances or whatever. And while the underlying metrics looked good, like, the results just were not that good. The glove also didn't look as good at first base. Like, he made some errors that I haven't seen from Bush. But Bush is doing the thing, man. You hit 5 home runs and you've got a slash line that is currently sitting at 327, 393, 694. That is his slugging, not his OPS. I mean, that is the thing. You're doing it. So Michael Bush is putting up the numbers that we thought Matt Mervis was going to put up. And honestly, at this point, the Cubs just need to trade Matt Mervis, give him a shot somewhere else. Like, there are teams who could use some help at first base, and Matt Mervis would be that dude for them. It doesn't look like he's going to get that shot with the Cubs unless there's an injury or something.
Here you go. You trade Matt Mervis to the Dodgers because now they don't have Michael Bush anymore.
They have Freddie Freeman, Danny.
No, to back up Freddie Freeman, like, just stash him.
Matt Mervis should be a Major League Baseball player, not a backup in AAA. You don't trade him to a team that has a first baseman. You trade him to a team that needs a first baseman.
Yeah, but I'm just hoping they'll take Yency Almonte back with the trade.
They're not going to do that. They definitely wanted us to take Yency Almonte. And honestly, one of my biggest concerns about this Cubs team right now, and I wrote about it last week for Bleed Cubby Blue, is that middle relief area of the bullpen. I mean, I'm glad they have been getting it done a little bit, but it seems like the only guys who can be actually counted on for outs are Mark Leiter Jr., Adbert Alvali, occasionally Hector Neris. Drew Smyly on every now and again.
Well, Hector Neris is just like a heart attack in a bag. I mean, he goes up, he walked the bases loaded, hit a guy, I think, or maybe that was Almonte. Either way, it's true fear every time these guys take the mound, and it's you don't know what you're going to get. Bullpens can sometimes be inconsistent, but wow, it's with Merriweather down too. I mean, talk about things that people aren't talking enough about.
That's a huge blow to this Cubs.
Well, I know he wasn't really a fan favorite, but he had really high end stuff, and he had a different look than everybody else because he threw it harder than everybody else. He threw it really fast, like near 100. Whereas Yancey's just funky, and Neris throws hard, I guess, but once again, his control is all over the place. I don't know, Sarah. They got to shore it up, and maybe they can promote from within. We did see the move of Kwas, who had options still.
And that's the issue with
Almonte. You got to see if it's going to work out. You got to see if he's going to get his groove, because he doesn't have any options. And Kwas did. If it was reverse, it would have been Almonte down to the minors, and Kwas would have stayed up to see what he could do with his no options. But he has options, so he's gone. And then Palencia came up and did something that I didn't even know he could do it, and went like 3-4 innings in one game. Like, he took some long relief role, which was not what Daniel Palencia, they're like, closer of the future. He throws 100, and then all of a sudden he's a long reliever. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
How did this happen?
You know, I don't know, but Craig Counsell is going to have to keep getting lucky with some stuff like that until some bullpen help arrives. And I don't know where it's coming from. I mean, I kind of look at the minor league system for the Cubs, and I see a lot of like strong arms they want to promote as starters, not guys they want to bring up as middle relievers or guys they want to bring up as long men. And this seems like a real need to me at this moment in time. Like, you have Justin Steele and Jameson Taillon on the injured list, which means that the dudes who should be your long men insurance guys in the bullpen, your Javier Assads, your Ben Browns, are starting. They just don't have. I mean, God bless Daniel Palencia for getting those 3 innings, 4 innings, whatever it was. You can't count on that every single day. I miss having guys like DJ Hertz in the system, traded for Jamer Candelario. I'm sure we'll regret that someday. Like, they're not going to call Cade Horton up for that spot because they want him to be a starter someday. So, like, you have to find some arms that can fill that gap. I did not get to see Keegan Thompson this weekend. I saw that he was up, but anything you saw there that you were intrigued by, or was it just scary?
Well, no, I think Keegan was doing a lot better. I mean, I think Keegan had a nice outing when they threw him out there. If memory serves, that he didn't pitch yesterday, but let me see, looking up Keegan right now. But no, he had a really scary time of it last couple years. I mean, he just totally freaking lost it. He had his one outing. He went 2 innings pitched, had 3 strikeouts, and didn't give up anything. No hits.
More of that, please, because Keegan Thompson being able to go a handful of innings would be a huge boon for this Cubs team.
And you got Wisniewski down there that could come up and start. I think they're keeping him stretched out right now for that reason. They want him to be a starter. Now, you might need him to be a starter is the sad thing, depending on how Taillon comes back. But you have some options. The other guy that's doing well down there is Thomas Pannone. But, I mean, geez, if we're down to that part of the depth, like, whew, we're in trouble. We're in the top of Pannone's in the rotation. But, like, it's gone well at the end. Wicks, although I wish he would go longer in games, he's been doing okay. And Assads looked really good. He just kind of ran out of steam in the sixth yesterday. But still, it's like out of the back end, who's stepped up and had to be the front end, especially with Hendo looking bad to start the year.
Kyle Hendricks might be cooked, y'all. I mean, I love Kyle Hendricks more than anything in the world. He's great. Last member of the 2016 team. I don't feel confident with him third time through the order at all right now. And I honestly don't know how confident I feel with him.
None of them.
Against any time through
the order. None of them the third time through the order. Not a single one of them.
Trust Shota.
He's the only
Shota's
one.
Great.
He's the only one. He's the only one I trust the third time through the order. And even then, you know, he's playing with fire because he's a fly ball pitcher. And I don't know how he gets away with it sometimes, to be honest. But, like, he's doing it. And I like, you know, he's high, low, he's out, he's in. He seems to, like, be a crafty dude that's, like, making it happen. But yeah, I'm waiting. You know what I'm waiting for? I want to see, and I don't know if I really want to see this. I want to see Shota wind blowing out at Wrigley, June day, 85 degrees. And I want to see what that looks like. I want to see
why are you a masochist?
No, that's what I mean. I'm scared of that game,
and you're scared of it and want to see it. Like, I don't understand why you're wishing bad things on yourself.
Because if it goes well, I'm going to be like Cy Young. You know what I mean? If it goes well, I'll be like, this guy is unstoppable.
Okay, well, I am not looking forward to that day because I don't think it's going to go well, and I think Danny is nuts, y'all. But we can talk about that. On the flip side, I do want to talk a little bit about Shota's start to the season because it's been incredible to watch. We need to take a quick break for our sponsors. On the flip side, we will talk about Shota. We will talk a little bit about Adbert Alzolay and how he's been closing out some games. We will also preview this Diamondback series, but first, a quick break. All right, before we preview this Diamondback series, let's do some pitching updates. Teasing you a little bit about Shota, I know what you're saying. I'm not looking forward to that day. I just think I know how it's going to go, and it's going to be bad. But until then, he looks great. He also does appear to have some wizardry about him in terms of, you know, the wind was blowing out when he pitched against the Dodgers. It was blowing out to left. And I was sort of envisioning, like, oh, my God, Mookie Betts is going to just do damage out to Waveland, right? Like, there is going to be a lot of really hard hit balls that are going right to our friend Ball Hawk Dave. And there were not, because the pitches that the Dodgers were swinging at and hitting were like these weak oppo fly balls. It was almost like, you know, we talk about weak ground ball contact with guys like Justin Steele. Shota seems to be able to generate weak fly ball contact, which, look, man, more power to you. He also has yet to give up an earned run, and I just think this is remarkable.
Yeah, well, the BABIP against him is 220 right now.
So you're saying unsustainable.
No, I think that's totally sustainable. Just like Drew Smyly's 158 BABIP is sustainable.
Yeah, these are not sustainable.
But luckily, you could also say that Jose Quas's 429 BABIP is not sustainable. Unfortunately, it might actually be sustainable. We're all... No, I mean, he's a great pitcher. I think he's crafty. In the same way, look at Assad, the way he gets outs. He had, what, 6 strikeouts yesterday? 5 strikeouts? I forget what it is.
Javier Assad has been nailed, man. I love Javier Assad.
And nobody trusts it. He didn't even make the rotation, you know. And granted, you had enough guys to fill it out until you didn't. But, you know, they didn't. They had him back there until Tyone went down, until they didn't have him back there until those guys went down, until Steele and Tyone went down. You needed the starts. Then he fills in, and people are even to this day saying, oh, well, he's too valuable out of the bullpen. We got to put Assad back in the bullpen as soon as one of these guys comes back. I'm like, no. He's already proven. Even last year, didn't he go 8 innings in a game against the Reds?
Yeah, Javier Assad is really interesting because there are moments where he definitely gets hammered third time through the order. But if he's, it's almost like if he's not, like if he starts out third time through the order and gets through those first couple guys in the lineup, you just know he's going to be able to do it. So it's a very weird small sample size thing where it's like the numbers are bad because every now and again when he gets the chance, it doesn't go well. And there's so few times he's gotten the chance. However, there's also times where he's gotten the chance and it's gone great. Right? Like, it's just gone really great. And we saw that from Javier Assad this week. And I'm here for it, man. I think Javier Assad has been exceptional. The other thing I love about Javier Assad, and I have no way to quantify this. I've actually been trying to come up with one because I want to write this article. And it will come out at some point this year when I figure out a way to quantify my fake stat called Chip Plus, which is dudes who have a chip on their shoulder and are just going to shove and get things done. Javier Assad is that guy. He has that chip on his shoulder. He does not care. Ice water running through his veins, like just going to get it done. And he doesn't care that he's not supposed to be the dude. And he doesn't care that he's facing the Dodgers. And he doesn't care that you're supposed to hit him hard. And he doesn't care that he's supposed to be in the bullpen. He is going to get you out. And it's amazing to watch.
Yeah. And what's it going to take? Because now he's been up since 2022. And I'm looking at the numbers right here. 163.2 innings pitched in the major leagues. And he has a sub 3 ERA in those 163.2 innings. 297. Like, what do you want? 142 strikeouts. So he's not the strikeout guy. He's not one per inning pitched. The FIP is high, but who cares? It's 428. Got an ERA plus in his career of 149. Like, what's it going to take for people to start trusting it? I mean, maybe his...
I'm already in. I've been trusting it since the World Baseball Classic. I watched him through Team USA, all of them, and the only person who got a single was Mike Trout. And I was just like, oh, Javier Assad is that. He's got that dog in him. He's that guy.
And if you've got to throw him in like a long relief mode, at the back of this rotation, there's a lot of room for that to work, especially if you're going to try to keep Hendo as a starter. He might be more of an opener at this point. And if he can't get out of the fourth, fifth inning, then you're going to need Javier Assad to maybe finish the game. And you might be looking, and hey, we got the right guy to employ it all in Craig Counsell. We saw him do it with the Brewers for years and piece together the back end of that rotation with that bullpen. And he knows what he's doing. He knows what he's doing with high-end bullpen arms. He knows what he's doing with a bunch of failed starters and everything in between. So I trust Craig Counsell with this.
Yeah, 100%. And it looks great so far. So let's, no doubt we're all on the Javier. Get on the Javier Assad train, people.
Get on the Javi train, yeah.
Get on the Javi train.
There's new Javi in town.
It's going great places. And Assad, I'm here for it. Let's also talk a little bit about Adbert Alvilay, back of the pen. He is starting to rack up the saves, looking a little bit like Adbert of old. What did you see from Alvilay this road trip so far, Danny?
Whew. I mean, listen, first of all, can I just say that the concept of the people's fist is somewhat new to me. Like, when did people start calling it the people's fist? Do you know when?
I didn't know we were calling it that.
Yeah, this has just sprung up. It must have been some, I don't know if JD said it or if this is a Boog thing, but I've seen now more and more fans and these podcasts that I've been listening to invite them to Ranter Fest. Is they're talking about the people's fist and okay, Adbert Alvilay, and then when he does the save, then we got to see the people's fist. And I mean, I don't like calling it that.
It's kind of weird.
Yeah, it grosses me out, to be honest, because it makes my mind go places. So I won't elaborate.
Danny, this is a children friendly show.
I don't like it. So
okay, well, thanks. On that note, next,
and I don't think it happens enough. We got two blown saves out of him already.
One of those doesn't count.
And one of those, well, one
when
of them,
he got called in the eighth inning to like clean up the mess and it was clear that the Cubs were already imploding. Like, sure. I'm not counting. I know it counts in the stats, but like, I'm not counting.
How about the one where Michael Bush saved him by stabbing that ball?
That was great. Good job, yeah. Michael Bush. That's what Michael Bush is supposed to do. That's his job.
Well, the save should be in his freaking category on his stats, not on Adbert Alvilay's, because Michael Bush saved that game, not Adbert Alvilay. Then he had, it's never clean. I like it. He struck out a couple to get the save in a tight game yesterday, 3-2. The hit was stupid. He just dumped it in there. It wasn't a big deal. He ended up, getting the save. He got it done. I just think if there's an opportunity, and I would hate to do it, it might demoralize the kid to make him lose the closer role, but I wouldn't mind if it wasn't a defined role. I wouldn't mind if, let's say, Neris started doing great, if they got to split a little bit of it, and that it wasn't, let's just get it done with innings. Because, sometimes when that role is defined, it gets in their heads. And I just don't think Alzolay's the guy to be that guy. Like, I don't think he's Aroldis Chapman. I don't think he's one of those. Well, not as a personality.
Look, I mean, no, I under no circumstance, use a different closer.
All right.
Like any other closer that you would like Rivera. To hold up as the ideal.
Okay. Mariano Rivera.
Perhaps we should aim slightly lower than unanimous Hall of Famer. Yeah. Like,
yeah, no, that's
give
fine.
Give me a current closer who you think is like great and not a psychopath to compare to Adler.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I think I'd say you need a psychopath. You need at least one guy on the team.
I don't think you do. I do not think you need to be a psychopath to close down baseball games. I don't think you need to be a terrible human being. I don't think you need to have a guy.
You can't be nice. He's too nice.
Who might go to jail to close down baseball games in Major League Baseball.
If there's anything I know about the 80s baseball movies I've seen is that you do. You do need somebody like that who's been in jail at least twice.
I don't think you do. You
need at least four tattoos.
No.
Absolutely. Five baby mamas and a partridge in a pear tree. No,
this is the most ridiculous conversation we've ever had on the show, and I will. Albert Alzolay is my closer, Danny. He's got a hype video. He's got a walkout song. We can all clap to it, and it's his job. So unless you think that Jed Hoyer is going to go out and trade yet again one of the Cubs' outstanding outfield talents like Nelson Velasquez for some random reliever, this is what we've got, Danny. This is what we're working with, and this is how it's going to roll.
And it could be a little better. And I'm not saying dial Alzolay back. It's something to watch. Like, if he's blowing save after save, everybody will be calling for his head.
He's not blowing save after save.
He blew two, almost blew a third. It's never clean. I want to see a string. Like, I want to see the Cubs, like, get it, obviously, on a winning streak. But let's say I want to see the next three save opportunities to have no issues. You know, and he's already got one, maybe even two. Like, if I see two more in a row, I'm on that Alzolay is the closer train. But I do think the overall bullpen could be a little bit different. I think that it would be a little bit helpful if the starters would go a little bit longer in the games and the bullpen wasn't stretched thin and somebody would pick up the slack there. But they're making moves, and it means they're serious. If you're willing to bring Kwas down and give Keegan Thompson a try because you can, and you're not just going to run with the guy because you unfortunately traded a great home run hitter in Nelson Velasquez for a bum like Kwas, you know, if you want to, but if you're still not going to eat crow on that and you're still going to bring the next guy up who looks effective to you, then I'm all for it. If you're just going to, as long as you're not going to sit there and do nothing while your bullpen implodes night after night, then at least you're trying stuff and I can't complain.
So speaking of Cubs guys who might be able to eventually give you more than five innings in a start, it does look like Jameson Taillon had a successful third rehab start on Friday. There is news that he might join the team in Arizona and or potentially start Thursday's game against the Marlins. The RotoWire probable pitcher grid actually has Taillon slotted in to get that Thursday start against the Marlins. How are you feeling about the return of Jameson Taillon, Danny? And what are the chances that we get second half Jameson Taillon, the guy who looked like what the Cubs signed, as opposed to first half Jameson Taillon, who made me have heart palpitations?
Well, probably 0% chance, Sarah, is that he'll be that guy because he's coming back from an injury. But I do think that with the way things have been going, it's not going to be massively disruptive. He's going to come out. He's going to get his starts. He's going to get his first start, and it'll be, you know, he'll be on a pitch count, plain and simple. And you'll maybe have Ben Brown finish the game for him, or, you know, I don't think they might want to get him to the rhythm of
Ben Brown is starting tonight.
Oh, so it won't be him. Yeah, that's right.
It might be Drew Smyly, though. So actually, right. Let's do some probable pitchers. So tonight, Monday, tax day, if you've not do your income taxes, y'all, it's time. Ben Brown is going against Merrill Kelly in Arizona. And then Tuesday will be Kyle Hendricks versus Tommy Henry. Throwback to Cubs general manager's past. And then Wednesday will be Jordan Wicks versus Brandon Fott. Fat? Fot.
Fot.
Whatever.
P-Fat. I call him P-Fat.
Is that Brandon Fott was the guy last year who really struggled in the regular season, looked great in the postseason. But if you recall, when he pitched at Wrigley, and I had great seats for this game, I was like kind of off center, off home. It was like one of those games you could just get really good seats for cheap, and I did. I was like, he's going to throw high fastballs that the Cubs are going to murder. And the Cubs hit like four home runs in one inning off this dude. It was incredible. And I was just like, this. I hope they can do that again on Wednesday when they face him in Arizona.
Yeah, and the Cubs always have trouble in Arizona, it seems, so I am dreading it a little bit. So it's Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Well, at least Wednesday's a day game, so we don't have to stay up late. So it's only two more stay up late on the weeknights games, Cubs fans.
Get your coffee for a few more days.
Yeah, Merrill Kelly's tough. You know, Ben Brown starting tonight, like you said. And I like what I've seen out of Ben. You know, he came out kind of feed into the fire as against the World Series champions. And so hopefully he settles in and becomes a part of this rotation, at least until we can get some of these other guys going. It looks like Steele, we're still going to be without him for at least until May. And we'll see what we get out of Tyone. He might not be able to take as many innings right away as we would hope an innings eater like him, but it's worth to get him going in the proper way. Especially if you're having Kyle Hendricks not going deep into the games, you're going to need more of your long relief types. So we'll see kind of how they use Ben Brown in the future, but he's going against Merrill Kelly. He's tough. One of their better pitchers on the staff. And then, like you said, Kyle Hendricks, you think he's toast. I mean, he's had tough starts to the year before, tough stretches, but wow. I mean, this last game that he pitched in, first time through the order, they nickeled and dimed him. They managed to score a couple runs, but they were hitting it. Second time, they're hitting it harder. Third time, they're matching the ball out of the yard. And it's only the fifth.
Right.
So it's like, it's rough stuff. I don't know anything about Henry. Do you know who Henry is for their
guy? I know he is a major league pitcher.
Tommy Henry.
He's a major league pitcher for the Diamondbacks. He's a 26-year-old lefty who has struggled a little bit to start the season so far. He's thrown 14 innings to the tune of a 5.79 ERA, 15 strikeouts, a little bit more than a K per nine, but the whip is really high at 1.64. So he is a guy that the Cubs could do some damage against. This Cubs team has been very good about generating contact and bringing runners in, right? Like the Cubs offense has been super solid to start the season. And I feel like part of why they've been doing that is they've been really good at taking balls, swinging at strikes, making good contact, and keeping the train rolling.
Yeah. So, Diamondbacks are a tough team. They are 500 so far this year. So, with that dude being a rookie, you hope you just jump all over him, but it doesn't ever seem to go that way, does it? And then they got our rookie too. Not really a rookie. I guess he came up last year, but
Wicks is a rookie. Wicks he's still a rookie for all intents and purposes.
So, with him going against PFAT, I mean, the thing I'm looking for is the walks. You know, you got to keep the walks. He's throwing too many pitches. He's got 8 walks and 12 some strikeouts are there. He's got like 17 strikeouts. He's striking dudes out, but he's walking way too many. You got to be more efficient. You got to get at least 5 innings out of the dude. You know, that's your number 5. That's all we're asking. Get 2 times through the order. Make it take 5 innings. You know, the dudes ends up at like 55 pitches after 2. And it's just, you're never going to do that's it's help. It's not helpful.
Yeah, no, I mean, we're going to see against this Diamondbacks team. It's going to be really interesting because we're going to see two rookies, Cubs pitchers, and both Ben Brown and Jordan Wicks to see what they can do. And frankly, I love Kyle Hendricks forever, but I feel better about the Brown and Wicks start at this moment in time than I do about the Hendricks one. I hope that Craig Counsell has somebody ready to go, Drew Smyly, looking at you, to maybe come in and piggyback on hopefully a couple times through the order for Kyle Hendricks. Let's talk about some hot Cubs hitters and some hot Diamondbacks hitters. For those of you who are new to the show, the way this works is we look at the last 2 weeks of stats, and anybody who has a WRC Plus over 110 gets a mention. So that for the Cubs is three guys. We've got Garrett Cooper, who to start the season, only 15 plate appearances, but he's slashing 385, 467, 846 in those plate appearances. I imagine that a lot of that is platoon advantage and that they'll try to keep him hot and in good situations to keep those numbers up. Michael Busch, who we talked about before, slashing 327, 393, 694 with five home runs to start the season. And then Seiya Suzuki, who is slashing 305, 368, 525 with three home runs to start the season. Danny, what do you see from the Cubs hot picks?
Yeah, I mean, we've been talking about it. It's like Michael Busch just seems like a real steal. He's what everybody thought Matt Mervis was going to be, and he's going to win Rookie of the Year. And that's Garrett Cooper. And let's talk about this because he's first baseman, too, for out of that first base spot, which has been since Anthony Rizzo was traded on Blue Friday, has been a complete black hole, is now our cup runneth over.
Right. We finally have some first base pop back, y'all. It's great. For the Diamondbacks, old friend Jock Peterson is off to a hot start this season. Again, that's a platoon situation. He only plays about half the games, but he's slashing 346, 471, 423 in those games so far with WRC plus of 151. Christian Walker in full-time play is slashing 300, 417, 467 with a WRC plus of 145. Lourdes Gurriel Jr., whose defense absolutely terrorized the Cubs down the stretch last year, slashing 297, 348, 531 to start the season. And then Ketel Marte is slashing 286, 347, 508. But the dude you all should keep an eye on, who you may not have heard of before, just came up. Blaze Alexander is with the Diamondbacks because Geraldo Perdomo went down with an injury. He's a rookie middle infielder for them. And he has started his season with a 286, 359, 457 slash line, two home runs, and a WRC plus of 124. This guy has, I am going to make tormenting the Cubs my job, written all over it.
You know, Sarah, I'm looking here, and before you even mentioned his name, I saw his name on the hitting stats for the Diamondbacks here on the website. And as soon as I saw his name, I'm like, Blaze Alexander, I'm like, this guy's going to be a problem, isn't he? I just saw the name. I didn't even look at the stats yet. I just saw the name, shortstop Blaze Alexander. I'm like, this man is going to torment us for the next 7 years because I've never heard of him. And what I'm excited about, tune in to Pat Hughes on the radio because you might get a start from Eugenio Suarez, who has found his way over to the Arizona Diamondbacks, apparently.
Eugenio Suarez and Wilson Contreras.
Yeah, exactly. So
use pronunciations of all time. Last but not least, I want to end with some Fangraphs has some power rankings up for this week, and they're basically using the ELO system that 538 used to use, which is kind of fun. So ELO, for those of you who don't play chess, it's a gaming metric system where you can sort of determine rankings based on past performance. And then you also can kind of like peek ahead and try to get an idea of like who are the strongest teams in baseball. According to that ELO ranking, the Cubs are actually doing pretty well, y'all. The Cubs, according to that ELO ranking, are the seventh strongest team in baseball. Unfortunately, they are behind another NL Central team because the Brewers are fourth. But this makes that puts the Cubs in this system as the fourth best team in the National League. And they look pretty good to my eyes right now.
Yeah, and right now the Central is the hottest division in baseball. First couple of weeks of the season have been a little ridiculous. And we're not playing each other. So it's not like, and that's part of it. It's like we're playing teams, but on I don't know who the Pirates have had to do as well as they have, but they're 11-5. Brewers are 10-4, and our friend Eric Wheelo, he was texting me. He's a big Brewers fan, and he texted me, and he's like, "Oh my God, we're going to be good again." Like that's all he said to me. I was like, oh, "Screw you, dude!" And they will, and they somehow will be good. They're going to put it together. They got young, great. That Jackson Churio's the real deal, you know. They get Yelich somehow has revived from the dead.
Well, I would just like to point out that, the Cubs at 9-6 are tied for third in the division with the Reds. And I fully expect them to come up and overtake the Reds and maybe even the Pirates at some point in time. But I would just like to point out that my favorite thing about these standings is that, once again, your St. Louis Cardinals are the weakest link And they are 7-9, the only team in the division that is under 500.
Yeah, still worse. It's still better than like the Giants, the Rockies, the Marlins have been god awful.
Marlins are off to a historically bad start. It's the worst start that they have ever had to a season. And I am hoping that they can just keep that up for one more week, because the Cubs have never played particularly well against the Marlins. And I feel like the Cubs should get to at least feast on some fish at Wrigley at the end of the week.
Well, you know who's the worst team in baseball?
The A's?
Nope.
The White Sox?
Yes.
The three teams that I consider the least competent teams in baseball are the Rockies, the White Sox, and the A's. I think the A's are doing it on purpose, so I kind of like give them a pass. That just makes them evil, not incompetent. But man, the Rockies and White Sox, what are y'all doing? Like, this is not it.
Especially in the city of Chicago, like, it's a little embarrassing, because I'm like, hey, you know, it'd be nice to have two relevant teams. I mean, New York has two relevant teams. For the most part, the Yankees and Mets have had success over the years. They're not known as laughing stocks. I mean, Mets have a little bit of a history of being doing Metsy things that are, you know, uproariously stupid, but it's not as bad as the White Sox. And really, it's going to take, I hate to say it, but the new ownership in whatever way it happens. And sometimes God has a way of sorting these things out for the people.
Well, on that note, with some divine inspiration to get us started on another week of baseball. Danny, what are you working on? Where can people find you? And what do you have going on this week while we watch these Cubs Diamondbacks games before the Marlins head back to Wrigley?
Well, I tell you, I've been really focused on this Ranter Fest that I'm throwing for
I'll
some
be
Ranter
there.
Shows.
I'll be there.
Yes, and that's the biggest thing. It's like Sarah Sanchez will be there. People from Bleacher Nation will be there. Miguel Esparza, the Spanish language broadcaster for the Cubs, and Jorge Moreno is going to be there. I'm going to have people from all the different podcasts and blogs, and hopefully a lot of them are out of town, so some of them can't be there. There's a new guy on the scene, the Setup Man. I don't know if you saw him tweeting out lately, Kyle. He's going to be there. So I'm trying to get everybody together and throw a really big celebration for Sun Ranto Show's 1,000th episode, and at the same time raise money for the Lost Boys, who is our sister organization for the Sun Ranto Show down. Levante does great work with the kids. He runs like a community center that's baseball focused and life skills focused down in the South Shore neighborhood here in Chicago. And anyway, we're going to try to raise money for him. So I'm really focused on that. There are tickets available. I just want to put that out on this podcast. Go to sunranter.com/ranterfest. The whole series of events. There's comedy. There's music. There's a big party on the Saturday. We're all going to the games. We're going to play softball as part of it. It's just check it out. Check out the site. I'm going to not shut up about it until it's over. And even then, I'm going to still talk about it. So
I'm looking forward. I'm very much looking forward to Ranter Fest. I think it's going to be a blast. Definitely come hang out with all of us. We're going to hit the bleachers. It's going to be a fun time, y'all. Nothing better than baseball and sun and fun Ranter folks. You can find me at Bleed Cubby Blue. I'm writing over there and on this podcast. Of course, if you are a fantasy baseball type, you can find me on my new fantasy baseball show on the Pitcherless Network. It's called Fantasy Feud. It's a debate-focused fantasy baseball show. Last week, we had Nick Pollock on arguing about starting pitchers. You will not want to miss that. We had a great debate about Javier Assad. So, Cubs fans, be sure you go back and check out the last Fantasy Feud with Nick Pollock talking about that. And this week, you can find me at Wrigley Field because the Cubs are coming back home, and I will be there for all of these Marlins games. So if you find yourself at Wrigley, definitely come say hi. We'll be back talking about those Marlins games and all of your Cubs news, notes, and banter next week. Until then.